Good morning. Whether you are joining us online or here in the sanctuary, welcome to First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin, Texas. We are a spiritual community dedicated to a free and responsible search for truth, meaning, and beauty. I am the Reverend Michelle LeGrave, your co-lead interim minister for a couple of more months. I am a kind of short, middle-aged, white woman with short, spiky-ish hair and glasses, wearing a all-black with a red stole full of flames. My pronouns are she, her. It is a joy to be with all of you today and to be with Thor and friends. I especially want to welcome you if you are visiting with us today. If you are joining us remotely, and if you can, please say hello in the comments and introduce yourself. If you're here in person, please join us for a social hour after the worship service. Whoever you are, wherever you come from, wherever you find yourself on your life's journey, whichever your pronouns, whether you've walked in or rolled in or dialed in, whomever you love, you are welcome here. You belong here. We come from a long tradition of seeing a spark of the divine in every person. It is in this tradition, this living tradition, that I invite you to greet the holy among us, either in the comments or by turning to those around you.
Good morning. I'm Margaret Borden. My pronouns are she, her. I'm a white woman in my 70s with short salt and pepper hair, glasses, wearing a white dress. Please join me now in the words by which we light our chalice. This is a flame we hold in our hearts as we strive for justice for everyone. This is the light we shine from self-oppression until they are no more. This is the warmth we share with one another as our struggle becomes our salvation.
Thank you.
I'm going to need a little help with our call to worship this morning. This is your part. Take off your shoes. My bare feet walk the earth reverently, for everything keeps crying. Take off your shoes. The ground you stand on is holy. The ground of your being is holy. When the wind sings through the pines like a breath of God, awakening you to the sacred present, take off your shoes. When the sun rises, coloring your world with dawn, put on your garment of adoration. Take off your shoes. When the red maple drops its last leaf of summer, wearing its burning bush robes no longer, read between its barren bushes and take off your shoes. When a new person comes into your life like a mystery about to unfold, and you find yourself marveling over the frailty and splendor of every human being, take off your shoes. When during the wee hours of the night, you drive slowly into the new day and the morning's fog, like angel wings, hovers mysteriously above you. Take off your shoes. Take off your shoes of distraction. Take off your shoes of ignorance and blindness. Take off your shoes of hurry and worry. Take off anything that prevents you from being a child of wonder. Take off your shoes. The ground you stand or sit or walk or roll on is holy.
One of the things that binds First UU together as a religious community is that the congregation has a common purpose. For First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin, that common purpose is the mission. The congregation wrote it together and put it on the wall in the sanctuary. Every Sunday, church participants say it together so that we may more readily carry it with us in our hearts throughout the week. Let us say it together now. Together, we nourish souls, transform lives, and do justice to build the beloved community.
Now is the time in our service for our time for all ages. So I'm going to tell you a story today that is really, really old. People have been telling this story for more than 2,000 years. And eventually it got written down in both the Jewish Bible, also known as the Hebrew Scriptures, or the Torah, and the Christian Bible in what is called the Old Testament. It's a story about someone called Moses. So Moses was living with his wife and his father-in-law in an area near Mount Horeb, and he was taking care of his father-in-law's sheep. His father-in-law was the priest of Midian. And he was taking care of the sheep, which means that he was sort of following them around to make sure that nothing bad happened to the sheep. He was acting as a shepherd. So he was wandering around in the wilderness with his father-in-law's sheep, and then for whatever reason, he decided to take a little detour and head up on Mount Horeb with all the sheep, and that was a mountain that was known as the Mountain of God. And while he was walking on the mountain, all of a sudden he saw a bush that looked like it was on fire. But even though it looked like it was on fire, the bush wasn't burning up. All the leaves were still green. Pretty weird, huh? So Moses said to himself, "I must turn aside and go over and look at this bush that is burning but not burning up." And you know what he saw when he looked at the bush? It wasn't really on fire. There was an angel in the bush. And it wasn't one of those angels that we think of today with a white gown and white wings and a golden halo. It was an angel that looked like it was on fire. It was so bright, it was hard to look at the angel. And then, as if that weren't enough, all of a sudden, Moses heard the voice of God. And God said, "Moses, Moses." And Moses said, "Here I am." And then God said, "Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, because the place you are standing on is holy ground." So Moses took off his sandals. And God said, "I am God, the God of your father, the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob." And he had to tell him which God he was, because back then they believed that different people had different gods. So he had to identify himself. And Moses got afraid and hid his face, because back then, people thought that if you looked at God, you might die. So Moses was really afraid. God is talking to him. This bush is not really on fire. He's hiding his face. He's got his sandals off. So God then said, "I have seen the misery of my people who are slaves in Egypt, and I am going to send you, Moses, to free them from slavery." And Moses said, "What if they don't believe me? What if they don't think that I'm really coming from you? I don't even know who you are. What do I tell them? What is your name?" And God said, "I am who I am." Which sounds a little interesting in English. In Hebrew, what they wrote down is the four letters, the four consonants of God's name, which are Yod, He, Vav, He, and which looks kind of like, sounds kind of like Y, V, H, V in English. But you know what they didn't write down? The vowels. So nobody really knows how to say it anyway. So now we just call God, God. But he said, I am who I am. Tell them, tell those people, my people down in Egypt who are in slavery, I am has sent me to you. This is my name forever and my title for all generations. And the reason this is important today is two things. We're talking about holy ground through the whole rest of the service. But also, do you remember a couple of weeks ago we had a child dedication? Do you remember what we did at the beginning of the child dedication, those of you who are here? Before we made the promises to the children, before we told them that we would look out for them and take care of them and help them learn and grow, the first thing we did, we said the child's name. We asked the parents, what is the name of your child? And they gave us the child's full name. So naming is very important. When Moses learned the name of God, God told him he was standing on holy ground. And when we learn your names, when you are dedicated and then we make promises to you, we are also on holy ground. It's a really special and sacred moment in the time of your life. And you are going to get dedicated in a couple of weeks. We're going to have a rose that we give you with water on it. And we're going to promise to take care of you all the way until you're grown up. And then you're going to help take care of the kids who come next. All of you do. All of you will.
I will be reading the second story by Stephen Huler. The second story is told by Stephen Huler and originates from the time he spent traveling in India and learning about Hinduism. A damp chill pervades the air as Amita wends her way down the dark street to the river. For warmth, she pulls her sari about her head and adjusts her light wool shawl more tightly around her shoulders. Then she reaches down with both hands to pull her two young children along with her. They stumble sleepily as she guides them through the narrow passageways. Just above the river, she stops quickly to buy a small lamp made of a curled dry leaf. In its center, a daub of clarified butter holds a wick. The three sidle through the huddled bodies of unidentifiable figures and down the ancient stone steps that run as far as they can see along the river's edge. Steps grooved through centuries of use. And then the black expanse of the river fills their gaze and they slip off their sandals and walk down the last steps into the icy cold water. The children are reluctant, their teeth chattering, their mother is determined, intent on fulfilling this ritual which begins each day of her life. They wash their bodies and their clothes with soap. All the while, the sky has been lightening. Across the river, the promise of sunrise turns the water from deep purple to rich blues tinged with orange. The shivering three steps again into the water, which now seems warm compared to the biting air. Amita is immersed to her knees, Minu and Bablu to their waists. Together, they sing prayers to the goddess Ganga, who is also the river. They visualize her magnificence, her nurturing presence as the purifier and mother of all existence. With a match, Minu lights the small leaf lamp and gently floats it out before them. At that moment, the sun's first rays peak above the sandy horizon. And they begin singing to the sun god, Surai, the source of all energy, the great provider.
Mm-hmm.
There once was a cow named Emily, a very frightened cow, who found herself in a slaughterhouse. She was next in line when all of a sudden the lunch whistle blew and the workers took a break. Well, Emily saw her chance and made her own break for it, leaping in a very uncow-like manner right over a 5-foot-high fence and heading for the woods. When she got to the woods, she ran with a herd of deer, all the while eluding capture by both slaughterhouse workers and the local police. Meanwhile, and unbeknownst to Emily, Emily's escape made headlines. People everywhere heard Emily's story and fell in love with the cow who had rescued herself from imminent death. In the midst of all this hubbub, a group of people came together to try to rescue Emily, and after some negotiation, she was purchased for $1. Later, when Emily's saviors pulled up to the edge of the woods with their truck, and after having wandered in the wilderness for 40 days, Emily was ready for her ordeal to end. Encouraged with some buckets of grain, Emily walked up the ramp and was brought to her new home on the grounds of the Peace Abbey in a town called Sherburne in Massachusetts. Emily lived for several more years and was credited by many as a teacher of love and compassion and a source of inspiration for change and growth. When Emily eventually died, she was buried on the grounds of the Peace Abbey, not far from a statue of Gandhi. Her grave is now marked by a bronze life-sized statue, and clippings from her hair and a sacred thread from her ear have been released in the Ganges River. People still make pilgrimages to visit her grave. Now let us join together in a time of meditation.
Thank you.
It is summer, and I am spending the week at Ferry Beach, one of our UU camp and conference centers located on the coast of Maine. I awake to a beautiful, bright, sunny, and warm day, and head to the beach as soon as I am dressed. I cross the boardwalk, slip out of my flip-flops, and quickly head down to the water's edge. There I stand with my feet buried in the sand and the waves lapping at my legs. This is my favorite place to meditate and pray. While standing and gazing out over the vast expanse of the ocean. This morning, though, the sun is exceptionally bright, and since it is early, low on the water. The sun and the sun's reflection on the water are so bright that I cannot see the ocean before me. When I try, my eyes hurt and water, and I am forced to lower my head so that I see only my toes and the water surrounding me. In this posture, I remain for a long time, recognizing the humility inherent in the pose, sensing its foreignness to both myself and my culture. And I wonder, here I am, standing before the sun and the ocean, feeling the immense power of both, forced into an attitude of deference and humility, which I cannot choose to overcome, short of turning and walking away. And I wonder, is this how Moses would have felt, barefoot and face hidden, standing before God? And I wonder, is this how Amita feels every morning of her life as she stands in the sacred waters of the river, bending to light and release her lamp? And I feel connected to those who have gone before me and will come after me, to those who also experience awe and wonder and humility. Eventually, I turn and slowly climb up the beach, replace my sandals, wash my feet, and return to my daily study of routine and learning. I return to the beach often. For me, these visits are a reenactment of my own sacred creation story. As I take off my shoes and move lightly and quickly down to the water's edge, I return to the primordial waters, to the murky origins of myself and my species. As I play and swim, I remember my origins, back when my kind were still fish in the sea. When I finally emerge from the water and climb back up the beach, I wonder at the struggle it always is to leave the water behind. And I imagine how difficult those first evolutionary transitions, those first climbs up onto the beach must have been. And I feel awe at those first changes from fish to amphibian. I think then that I understand the dolphin, a mammal who once on land chose to return to the sea. I understand, for I too feel these urges, for I too feel the call of the deep, and I know the power of this holy ground. Thank you. In all of these stories, there is a common experience of standing or walking on holy ground. For Moses, it is at Mount Horeb. For Amita, in the River Ganges. For Emily, and later her pilgrims, on the grounds of the Peace Abbey. For myself, at the ocean's edge. At various times and in various ways, we all visit holy ground. In doing so, some of us take off our shoes. Some of us come face to face with God. Some of us commune with the cosmos. Some of us come face to face with our own salvation. I imagine there are many, many other stories about holy ground which I could tell. People of many faiths walk labyrinths, pagans cast circles, Hindus draw sacred diagrams called kolams near the entryways of their homes, surgeons place special covers over their shoes before entering operating rooms. Walking, standing, rolling, or simply being on holy ground is a common human experience, one that many of us share. When we visit holy ground, we experience awe and wonder. We ponder the great mysteries of life. We feel the force of evolution. We sense the power which emerges from our collective humanity. The power of change and growth, of inspiration and creativity, and of love. We need not embark on a pilgrimage to far-off lands to visit holy ground. Holy ground is available to us at all times and in all places. Holy ground is here, in this sanctuary. Out there in the art gallery, around the corner in Housen Hall where we visit with each other after the service, down that hallway there where the children meet for classes and staff work to fulfill the mission of this congregation, out on the playgrounds and in the youth room, in your homes and in so many, many places. It is we who must set an intention to understand the ground we happen upon is holy. It is we who must pay attention. An experience of the sacred, of the holy, is available to us at any time, anywhere. When I received my call to ministry, I was not at a pilgrimage to a sacred site, or standing at the ocean's edge. I was sitting at my dining room table reading a magazine. Moving to an understanding of the ground we find ourselves upon as sacred or holy ground can feel risky, and it's not a journey to be undertaken lightly. When we visit holy ground, we confront the nature of life and death. We gain insight. We become self-aware. We come face to face with those parts of ourselves and others we had not previously known. We realize our human nature. We may even come to know God. Where is your holy ground? Where do you take off your shoes? When do you bow your head? As Unitarian Universalists, it is our religious duty to follow the paths each of us finds sacred to ourselves. These paths are incredibly diverse, take many forms, and lead in many directions. They are all holy. As together we navigate the triumphs and tribulations of this great mystery we call human life, we are blessed to be able to join together in this community of faith, which honors such divergent understandings of the human, of the divine, of the holy. May we be so blessed evermore. Amen, and blessed be.
Please join me now in the words by which we extinguish our chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we hold in our hearts until we are together again.
Open your eyes, your ears, your hearts, your minds, your spirits. The ground you sit, stand, walk, roll, dance, crawl upon is holy. As you remember, as you leave this place, remember you are blessed. The holy, the sacred, is available to you at all times and in all places. Go forth, blessing all others as you yourselves are now blessed. Amen, and blessed be.
This is a production of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, go to our website at austinuu.org.